We know that pledge breaks are your least favorite part of listening to NHPR. So we've been trying really hard to eliminate them this month. If we manage it, if you help us manage it, we can eliminate those pledge breaks this month. But we need your help now to make it happen. More of your favorite programs, fewer interruptions when you make a gift now at nhpr.org. This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. It's our weekly New Hampshire News Roundup. Today is the final day for candidates to make it official with the Secretary of State's office as the June filing period comes to a close. On Wednesday, Executive Counselor Chris Sununu put his name in and at the same time got some pushback for criticizing how state politicians have handled the opioid epidemic. Here's Sununu.
This is an absolute crisis across the state, and we've had no leadership in Concord. We have had no leadership at the local level. We need a completely different mindset to tackle this and take it head on. There's not going to be a golden answer out of Concord, but you need leadership to change the culture.
But those who've been working on the issue were miffed. Manchester Police Chief Nick Willard said Sununu's comment was idiotic, while Queen City Mayor Ted Gatsis, also running for governor, asked Sununu to retract his statement and apologize. Meanwhile, another GOP gubernatorial hopeful, three-term Senator Jeanne Forrester, filed with a reference to Gatsis and Sununu, both better-known rivals.
Somebody should not get a job based on their last name. They should get the job because they want to do the job, and they're going to lay out the policies and show people the direction they're going to take the state. I think the voters have caught up to that.
Meanwhile, Governor Maggie Hassan filed this week for U.S. Senate. The governor said she will fight for what she called New Hampshire's priorities.
I've been working for the people of New Hampshire, and Kelly Ayotte has been standing with special interest time and time again, whether it's with the Supreme Court or whether it's now with Donald Trump and his special interest backers.
It's the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup today in The Exchange, and let's hear from you. Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Our guests this week are Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at SNHU, author of the website, NH Political Capital. Dean, welcome back.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us, Casey McDermott, digital reporter for us here at NHPR. Casey, good to see you.
Good morning.
And also with us, Allie Morris, Statehouse reporter for the Concord Monitor. And Allie, welcome back. Good to see you.
Thanks, you too.
And with us now for a few stories from the Manchester area this week is Trent Spinner. He's executive editor for the New Hampshire Union Leader and Sunday News. Trent, thanks for taking time out.
Good morning.
Well, lots going on, Trent, in Manchester this week, where investigators at the federal, state, and local level continue to look into the cause of a fire in Manchester that claimed four lives early Monday morning. And, you know, as family and friends mourn this tragedy, some people are wondering whether the unknown cause of the fire might reveal larger public safety issues. What is the latest on this, Trent? What more do we know now than we did on Tuesday morning?
Yeah, this is a tragic story. This is the worst fire in terms of fatalities that the state has seen in a decade.
Wow.
Four people dead, including two young boys and a couple. It's tragic for everyone who knew the family downtown. Here's what we know. The fire seems to have spread very quickly, but we went through the records and we found that the city went and inspected this building. There were a couple of issues. There were a few missing smoke detectors, but the landlord, back in December, fixed everything, and they got assigned, it's called a certificate of occupancy here in Manchester. They passed with flying colors. But the bigger question is, how is this fire able to spread so quickly? The police and fire investigators are saying, we don't think that a crime happened here. And actually, we've seen some video, surveillance video, from an auto body shop right across the street. And you can see the fire, and it's frightening to see how quickly this fire spread. It starts as just a little bit of sort of a wispy black smoke, but within seconds, this thing is an explosive fire that sadly killed this whole family of four. We hope to find an official cause sometime in the next few days. We hope to hear from the fire marshal's office what the official cause was. It sounds like there was a porch in the back, And I think that they're looking at a couple of things, maybe a grill out there, or maybe some smoking that was taking place out there as a cause. But if you watch the video, there's no one running up the side of the building setting this fire, so it doesn't seem like arson is the case here.
Well, and Trent, in several New Hampshire cities, you know, Manchester, Concord come to mind. I mean, there are concerns about old buildings, absentee landlords who don't check up on things as much as they sometimes should. But it doesn't sound like that was the case this time.
No, and yes, this is an old building, and actually, we've talked to a bunch of people who they used to live in the building, and you know, their family owned a dentist office there. I mean, this building has a lot of history on Wilson Street, and it is an older building, and it doesn't have sprinklers. It's older construction, but you can see from the city, and we've seen from the city records that the landlord was not absentee. The landlord did what needed to happen. There was actually a landlord who owned it for 15 years previously. He's the one who got all the inspections and got and made sure that all the smoke detectors were in there. A new landlord just bought it 2 months ago, and actually, just as evidence that he's not, in fact, an absentee landlord, what he did, we had a story yesterday from our reporter Mark Hayward, who actually found out that this guy went around and found the tenants who had been left homeless, and not only gave them their security deposit back, but gave them their June rent back so that they were able to find new places to live.
Another story from your paper, Trent, I wanted to ask you about. Paul Feely from the Union Leader reported this week that Manchester is expecting to receive 170 refugees from the Middle East and other areas to arrive between September this year and September of next year. According to New Hampshire Refugee Coordinator Barbara Siebert, Concord and Nashua will also be resettling refugees in their communities as well. How has, Trent, the arrival of refugees been greeted in Manchester?
Well, and I'm glad you brought up Nashua and Concord, because there are going to be 190 people in Nashua and 135 people in Concord. And I think each of these cities is dealing with it in different ways. I think our mayor, Ted Gatsis, has been pretty open that he is very concerned about Syrian refugees. The governor broke with her party several months ago to say that there needs to be a temporary halt on Syrian refugees. When she filed to run for Senate, she wouldn't exactly answer that question. So it's unclear where she stands right now. But each of these cities is dealing with it in different ways. And you'll see that there are, in Manchester, Nashua, and Concord, as your listeners know, there is a big refugee community. And in Manchester, at least, there seems to be some hesitation about what to do and how to best deal with this. As you know, we can't deny refugees. The city has none of these cities have any right to say refugees can't be resettled here. So they just have to deal with it.
Well, the State Department is in charge of, the numbers and where they go and so forth. And Allie Morris, you've covered this issue here in Concord. How has the reaction been in the capital city toward the influx of new refugees?
Yeah, this issue, Concord, as you know, has been getting refugees for some time. We have a lot of new Americans in the schools. They've really become a part of the community here. And I think, as the Syrian refugee issue has been politicized, that's where, people have drawn more attention to refugees and the screening process. But Concord has actually gotten a Syrian refugee group. There's been quite a community outpouring to try and welcome them to the community. So I think also because we don't have a major race, Mayor Ted Gatsis in Manchester is running for governor. We don't have a lot of politicizing the issue here.
Well, we'll talk about that Gatsis filing for governor and all the other candidates later this hour, because the filing period closes today, and there was a lot of people making their way to the Secretary of State's office. I also want to remind everyone that this is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup, and you can join us with your questions and comments at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Join us as we cover some of the top stories around the Granite State this week. And Trent Spinner, one more Manchester story that we did want to ask you about. A protest on Tuesday challenged the actions of Manchester police, who issued a shelter-in-place order on the city's west side last month after that shooting of two policemen. Now, they were not killed, injured, luckily, instead of killed. Also in question by the protesters was the use of a SWAT team and a Bearcat armored vehicle in a separate incident last week. So what's this about, Trent? What's the sort of competing philosophies here?
This is a really interesting story, and kind of, I think, is a sort of shines a light at what both the police and the Free State Project are dealing with here in New Hampshire. Let's remember back to a month ago when on the west side of Manchester, two officers were shot around five in the morning. Around two in the morning, they had someone under arrest by five, but he was only under arrest for I think it was like resisting detention or something like that. And Ian McPherson, who was eventually charged with attempted capital murder, wasn't charged for actually shooting those officers until several hours later. So the question here is, did the police do the right thing by issuing the shelter in place, and did the schools do the right thing by canceling most of the schools on the west side for several hours, about 5 hours, after Ian McPherson had been arrested, but before he had been charged with attempted capital murder?
So they weren't sure if they'd gotten their guy yet, basically.
And that's what, yeah, we had a story with police that laid out the entire timeline, and prosecutors say, look, we had a guy who came up to us at 5 in the morning who we thought could be the suspect, but we weren't 100% sure that he was the right guy, and we needed the time to make sure that we did everything right, including getting search warrants and arrest affidavits prepared. And so that takes time, right? I mean, and we eventually got those warrants, and you could see that they were pretty extensive. The former president of the Free State Project and about 60 members of her group had a protest outside of City Hall the other day. They were holding signs that said, "More Mayberry, less Fallujah, lockdowns are for prisons, free people, move freely." But it was actually interesting. While they were outside protesting, one of the Manchester aldermen said, "What you guys are doing is wrong, and it makes me want to fund the Manchester Police Department more." They question the police tactics, right? Is it okay for a city like Manchester, right, which we still consider kind of a small town, even though it's not really, is it okay for these towns to have Bearcats and SWAT gear? We ran a photo of this man who his mother had called. This was this week. His mother called and said he was having some mental health issues. Can you go check on him? And she said that he was self-medicating with methamphetamine, which sounds like a terrible idea. So the police go to check on him, and he's barricaded inside his house. They literally take the Bearcat, they roll it up to the window, and we ran this photo of him jumping out the window with tear gas following him. You could see the tear gas in the photo, and you had these officers in SWAT gear, heavily armed, pointing their guns at him, and this was a guy who was having a mental health issue. So
Like overkill to the Free State folks.
It felt like overkill to the Free State folks. The lockdown felt like overkill to the Free State folks. And I think that's a conversation that will be ongoing here, because the police say, they just had two officers who were shot last month. And so, there are safety concerns for them.
Well, and we've got a little bit of sound of Carla Garrick at the protest. As you said, she has been a member of the Free State Project. She's a resident of Manchester now. Let's hear what Carla had to say about what she calls the militarization of city police. This, by the way, is from WMUR-TV.
People were told to shelter in place for more than 5 hours after the suspect had actually been apprehended. So I think starting a dialogue about what liberties we're willing to give up for security.
And Dean, I want to turn to you on that, too. We talked about this last year when the city of Keene bought a Bearcat, when the city of Concord was considering buying a Bearcat. So this has been an ongoing issue. It's not
right.
New.
We have talked about this for a while. There was a bit of a Bearcat fever for a while there, with a number of cities trying to get these military vehicles for their first responders and their police forces. This issue of the militarization of the police is something that the civil liberties advocates and police departments and, city councils have been kind of butting heads on for some time now. It's been increasingly easy although I think maybe the Obama administration has dialed this back a little bit. It was increasingly easy to get this surplus military equipment to use at the local level. And there is some concern that it's problematic to have police forces react with a SWAT team, and sometimes it escalates the situation. We've been having this debate for a while. It's not just here. It's been all around the country in the last couple of years.
Allie, go ahead.
Yeah, and I just want to jump in and say at the legislative level, they're trying to kind of rein this into a lot of these military gear comes from the federal government. There's a study committee to look at whether we should return some of these things.
Sort of surplus.
Exactly.
Department of Defense equipment.
Yeah, the Obama administration started a recall this year to pull back some of the more high-tech things. The Meredith Police Department had to return its grenade launcher that it had for a couple years. And so I think this debate is really just beginning,
and
especially
I think
at the Statehouse.
It was Berlin that wanted the Bearcat, and they had all kinds of conditions about what the Bearcat actually could and could not do, precisely because of this concern of over-militarizing the equipment.
You can use it in this situation, but not.
Or with these features, but not those features.
Yeah. One last question for you, Trent, and then we'll let you go. And thank you again for your time. We've talked about a lot of the troubles in Manchester recently. As we've all said earlier, Manchester Mayor Ted Gatzis is running for governor. How is he talking about this string of bad headlines from his city?
Yeah, it's certainly a challenge. We had a front page story this week that detailed all the shootings that have happened in the city, and we cover it every day, and it sort of melts together. And I'm sure that that's the same for our readers and for residents. But until you see it all laid out, and we did a map with where all the shootings were, until you really see just how tough the city, certain parts of the city have become, I think it's really difficult to understand. How bad it's become. And so the mayor is very aggressively trying to work on this. He is in touch with the police and the fire departments almost every day. And he's very available. But at the end of the day, there's a tax cap in Manchester. There's only so much money. There are only so many officers on the street. And we constantly hear from police that they need more men and women on the street. It's going to be a difficult road to hoe for him. I think that for the mayor of Manchester, Ted Gatzis, I think that his opponents are going to use crime in Manchester against him. But let's not forget that he's won, right? That he's won elections where there's crime in Manchester is nothing new, and he's been able to win elections in the past. So I think it'll be an interesting dynamic to watch.
All right. Well, Trent Spinner, thank you very much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. See you soon. Again, that's Trent Spinner. He's executive editor of the New Hampshire Union Leader and Sunday News. The number for you to join us on the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. And coming up in a moment, we will find out who filed their candidacies this week at the Secretary of State's office. Today's the last day for anybody who wants to run in the fall to make it official. We'll find out more in just a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. It's the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup. As always, you can join us, The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Our guests this week are Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at SNHU, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. Also with us, Allie Morris, State House reporter at the Concord Monitor, and our own Casey McDermott, digital reporter for NHPR. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, let's go to our listeners now. And Steve's in Merrimack. Hi, Steve. You're on the weekly news roundup. Go ahead.
Good. I just had a question. Now that Hillary Clinton has clinched the Democratic nomination, a lot more talk will be about her down ticket effect. This conversation has been exhausted on the Republican side. So my question is, in our state, where Hillary Clinton is incredibly unpopular, and Governor Hassan has closely aligned with her on so many issues, do you think Hillary will have a negative impact on Hassan's race for Senate?
Well, thanks for the question, Steve. I appreciate it. And I'll turn to you first, Casey.
Well, it's tough to say exactly what kind of impact that is going to have. I'm looking at a story right now that notes that a recent Boston Herald Franklin Pierce poll found that both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are viewed unfavorably by more than 60% of New Hampshire voters. Now, that's just a snapshot, of course, and we have a long way until the election. But there is probably some fair questions to be raised about the impact that would have on Governor Maggie Hassan's race, for example, for U.S. Senate. Governor Hassan has been a longtime ally of Hillary Clinton. I believe she endorsed her in 2008 as well as in 2016 and has been very vocal about her support for Hillary Clinton. So I don't think we'll see her kind of shying away from that in the same way that I think we've seen Senator Ayotte trying to kind of distance herself a little bit from the statements that Donald Trump has made both recently and earlier on in the campaign. So I think those two candidates are taking kind of different tacks to the top ticket candidates. But for now, I think that, it remains to be seen kind of what kind of effect that's going to have moving forward. And it's also important to keep in mind that, Senator Sanders enjoyed widespread support in New Hampshire. So whether those people are going to support Governor Hassan as a Clinton ally also is kind of a big question up in the air right now.
Well, and when Governor Hassan filed for U.S. Senate, Allie, she made reference to what Casey just mentioned, saying that Kelly Ayotte was a strong supporter of Donald Trump, saying that Kelly Ayotte's condemnation of Donald Trump's criticism of the judge of Mexican descent wasn't strong enough. Just fill us in a little bit there, Allie, if you could, please.
Yeah, sure. So earlier this week, last week, Donald Trump made some comments that a lawsuit he's involved with over Trump University has a judge who's actually from Indiana but of Hispanic heritage. He said that he might not give him a fair shake because he called him Mexican. And that has provoked outrage among Republicans. Kelly Ayotte actually called him to retract the statement. And, you know, I think what we'll see, as Casey mentioned a lot in this election, is Democrats trying to tie Republicans from U.S. Senate governor candidate to Trump and to some of these statements. You know, we often hear reporters and Democrats calling on people to ask Republicans' opinions of Trump every time he makes a misstep or says something that kind of raises people's suspicions or concerns. And I think we'll continue to see that going forward.
Dean?
Yeah. Our friend James Pindle had a story in the Boston Globe yesterday about the differences in the ways in which the Trump and Clinton campaigns are or are not organizing in the state for the fall. And the Clinton campaign has devoted a lot of resources to the state. They're up and running. He found the Trump campaign much less so. And in fact, I think a few weeks ago, the Trump campaign mentioned that they have this 15-state strategy. And my recollection was New Hampshire was not one of those states, even though Donald Trump will be here on Monday to give a speech. So, you know, getting back to Steve's initial question, I think it really depends on a couple of things. Sure, Hassan has clearly tied herself to Hillary Clinton. I interviewed her a few weeks ago, and she gave a strong defense of Hillary Clinton's candidacy. A lot of it will have to do on Clinton's ability to pull in the Sanders supporters in the state, just as she'll need to do nationally. It is also true that when you get to a general election, opinions tend to change and people tend to coalesce around one party or the other. So, and on top of that, in recent cycles, presidential years have been good years for Democrats in the state. So it may be a little bit of a drag on the ticket, but I think there are things that Governor Hassan can do with the Clinton campaign to try to pump up those numbers a bit.
Well, Steve, thanks again for the call. Again, it's the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup today in the Exchange. You can join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can always find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's go to Jason next in Bradford. Hi, Jason, you're on the air. Go ahead.
How you doing, Laura? How are you doing today?
Good. Go ahead, Jason.
Good. I have a particular question, although Steve just brought up a valid point, and I just wanted to comment on something you two just discussed that I think is important. And if I have time for my actual question, I will. But my thought was, I find it interesting that Maggie is so tied to Hillary Clinton and made it very apparent. And I think this is concerning on the grounds that she's switching now from being a state governor to a representative of the state of New Hampshire at the federal level. And because, you know, she recently endorsed Hillary, she really went against what the people of New Hampshire had requested and said, we want Bernie. And that was the will of the people of New Hampshire. And Governor Hassan essentially said, you know, okay, that's, I understand your plight, people, but I feel I know better than all of you. And ultimately gave her superdelegate to vote to Hillary Clinton instead. So,
well, and it's Governor Hassan, Jason, by the way. People often make
sorry,
that
Governor
mistake.
Hassan.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry. So quick question from you, Jason, and then we'll jump in.
Yeah.
You said you had a quick question.
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
Yeah, my other question was, you know, I voted for Maggie as our governor, and I thought she was good as a governor, but she's been out of the state a lot lately now, and I'm also wondering, how do you feel that that's going to affect her perception of people in the rest of the state? You know, she's been out of the state, I think, over 40 days now, just in the past 35 days. So give her
well,
a
and Jason, yeah, so. Thank you for raising the point. And Casey McDermott, the Ayotte campaign sends almost daily emails tracking how often Governor Hassan is out of the state. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a complaint that you're going to continue to hear. And anytime you have an incumbent for a particular position that is seeking out higher office, part of that campaign process is probably going to involve some out-of-state travel. So I think that so long as Governor Hassan continues to campaign out of state and fundraise out of state, that's just going to continue to feed the kind of fodder on the Republican side that we see coming from the Ayotte camp and Republicans in general. And I think it is important to point out, I think the caller had said that Governor Hassan had gone against the vote of the people when she endorsed Clinton. She actually endorsed Clinton back in September, so several months before the primary. Now, that endorsement has remained contentious, though, because of this issue around superdelegates, which are the types of delegates that don't have to be bound by the vote of the primary. So there has been considerable pressure on her and others like Senator Jeanne Shaheen and other prominent officials to switch their support over to Senator Sanders in New Hampshire since he won the primary here.
Okay. So, Dean Spiliotis, how much do these charges of Governor Hassan taking time to go out of state, to raise money, to meet national folks as she runs for U.S. Senate, how much is that going to be a negative?
I don't know that it'll be a big negative. This is it's a very common practice. This is going to be an incredibly expensive campaign. There'll be a lot of money coming from the outside of New Hampshire. You really have to go outside to get the kind of money that will be needed to run this. Candidates do this in general. So as long as the system is set up the way it is, with the kind of money that you can spend, you know, candidates make a lot of out-of-state trips. I'm reminded of 2004 when Howard Dean in neighboring Vermont ran for governor, and his opponents wanted his schedules. They wanted to know who was paying for the Secret Service. They were clocking the number of days he spent traveling around the country. This is sort of a smaller version of that, but it's been very common for a long time, given how much money is in the process.
Well, one more question for all of you about this Hassan-Ayotte race. Governor Hassan's own leadership in battling the opioid crisis was the subject of a controversial TV ad put up by the pro-Republican group One Nation. It was quickly denounced by drug treatment advocates, Democrats, of course, and even Senator Ayotte, who said, look, no one should be playing politics with the heroin epidemic. Let's hear a little bit of that ad.
The heroin epidemic has devastated New Hampshire families. Yet in New England, New Hampshire ranked dead last in spending on substance abuse programs in 2014. And Governor Maggie Hassan's budget veto last year forced delays for substance abuse programs, program delays that threatened families in need. Then Governor Hassan's.
So, Allie Morris, you've been covering the State House. You covered that whole budget. How much truth, how much fiction in that ad?
Yeah, well, I think I don't know if we can get into the truth of the ad, because I think most of it is real partisan politics. I think any statement you can find truth and some falsehoods in. I think the biggest issue is, you know, one in four voters here name substance abuse as a top issue facing the state. The death rate keeps going up from drug overdoses. It's obviously a serious issue. And I think the concern among both sides, you know, we saw Kelly Ayotte call for this ad to be taken down, and Maggie Hassan's campaign was also active in calling for the ad to come down. They say they don't want to politicize the issue. I think advocates agree because they worry that if it becomes a partisan wedge, they won't be able to make progress on the issue. We saw at the State House quite a few bills come through this year. Most had bipartisan backing. And I think the concern is if it becomes sort of an attack point, they won't be able to make progress going forward. But as we saw this week, substance abuse became a major issue in the gubernatorial race after Chris Sununu made some comments about leadership on the issue. He said there wasn't leadership at the state level or the local level, which prompted, you know, retorts from local police departments saying, hey, you know, we're out here on the front lines dealing with this every day. What have you done on this issue at the Executive Council? So I think it's somewhat inevitable that this issue is going to become politicized in these races just because it's on everyone's mind. And voters want to know what these politicians have done to try to solve it.
It is interesting to hear you say, though, Allie, that there's a serious effort by people to not politicize this issue.
Yeah. And I think in some respect, just by saying that you don't want to politicize the issue, you're doing that. You know, we see Governor Hassan and Kelly Ayotte in both of their campaigns touting what they have done on the issue. And I think in some ways, as soon as you start talking about your accomplishments, you kind of open yourself up to scrutiny to see, you know, exactly how much have you done on this issue and is there more that maybe you could have done?
So let's talk a little bit more about Chris Sununu getting into trouble for politicizing this issue. And Casey, just fill us in.
Yeah, so those comments were part of Chris Sununu, executive counselor, Republican from Salem, I believe. He filed his candidacy for governor earlier this week. And as part of the discussion around kind of his priorities and what he wanted to do for the state, he had listed off several things, but stepping up action on the drug crisis was kind of the final bullet point in that list. And as part of those comments, he said there's an absolute crisis in the state. We've had no leadership at Concord and no leadership at the local level. We need to take a completely different mindset to tackle this and take it head on. And basically was making the point that he didn't see enough action around this issue at both the state and the local level. So that comment was, you know, tweeted out by reporters who were at the event. The Manchester police chief had seen those comments on Twitter and got kind of angry because he's like, hey,
Nick Willard.
Yeah, Nick Willard.
He's living this every day.
Yeah, we've seen this. We're on the front lines. My police officers are doing a lot on this issue. And he tweeted that these comments were, I believe, idiotic was the word that he used to describe them. So that kind of caught a lot of people's attention. I believe the Manchester Police account actually also tweeted some criticism of this. Jeannie Forrester, another Republican candidate for Senate, Ted Gatsis, the mayor of Manchester, and one of those local leaders that Chris Sununu was kind of implicitly criticizing also pushed back on this. So the comments really stirred up a lot of criticism all around.
Frustration because people who feel like they have been working hard didn't appreciate being told,
right,
you're not doing anything.
Right.
Dean, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, there really is no way that this issue can be kept out of the political discourse. You're going to virtually any office you mention, governor, U.S. senator, state senator, et cetera, the discussion of the opioid crisis, how to solve it, how to continue to make progress, it's going to be part of the political discussion. You know, my criticism of that ad, the One Nation ad, and I've said this probably every 2 years for the last 8 or 10 years, is these outside groups typically come up with these ads that are heavy-handed. They lack a nuanced understanding of kind of the internal politics of the state and the political culture of the state. So they're just sort of not really helpful to anybody. They're just basically a distraction, as we've seen. So, sure, it's going to be part of the conversation. It should be part of the conversation. But these outside groups, you're going to be seeing these ads from now until November that just really sort of are kind of beside the point of the political discussion in the state. But there's a lot of money behind them, and so you have to kind of tolerate them.
Casey?
Yeah, and just as a follow-up, just for some more clarification, the Concord Monitor had reached out to the Sununu campaign after this kind of firestorm kicked up on social media, and a spokesman kind of tried to clarify the comments later on by saying that the problems associated with the drug crisis are not about police officers or firefighters, and that instead Sununu was referencing a lack of leadership in the governor's office. So that was kind of an attempt, I think, to walk that back, but the outrage has not fully kind of dissipated around that.
All right. And I've got several Facebook comments from our listeners as well on this. I will share them with you after a short break. And we have a lot more filings to talk about in just a moment. It's the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup today in the Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Let's hear from you as we cover some of the top Granite State stories of the week. The Exchange number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Our guests this week are Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at SNHU, Casey McDermott, digital reporter for NHPR, and Allie Morris, statehouse reporter for the Concord Monitor. And earlier in the program, we were talking about the dust-up between the police chief of Manchester, Nick Willard, upset with Chris Sununu's comments as he filed to run for governor, saying there was no leadership on the issue of the opioid epidemic. A couple comments from our listeners on Facebook. Ken says Chris Sununu was grandstanding, trying to make political hay about the drug problem in our state. Aaron says, I'd love to see Chris take some leadership and fund aid for the opioid crisis, put his money where his mouth is. Scott says, I'm absolutely no fan of Sununu, would not vote for him in a million years. But what exactly is idiotic about that statement? Scott says, we do need way more money for treatment and education. We do need leadership, and we do need a change in thinking. Thanks for those Facebook comments. We'll take your questions and comments right now as well at 1-800-892-6477. So all of you, as we've been saying, the filing period for candidates this fall ends today. Allie Morris, Jeannie Forrester also filed today for governor. She's a Republican state senator. And another Republican filed, Frank Edelblue. What can you tell us about Jeannie Forrester and Frank Edelblue, Allie?
Yeah, sure. So Jeannie Forrester filed yesterday. She is a Republican state senator from Meredith. Right now, she's leading the finance committee. She helped craft the budget last year. And, you know, she painted herself as an outsider this week. And specifically, she said, you know, a name shouldn't guarantee an election. She's, of course, referring to, you know, Chris Sununu, whose father was governor. And, you know, she's suffered a bit of a blow this week when Senate President Chuck Morris actually endorsed Sununu. for governor. And, you know, I don't think that people were expecting him to get in the race so early. She actually brushed off his endorsement of Sununu, saying that the political establishment would sort of line up between these leaders. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, as we have someone in the Executive Council, Chris Sununu, Jeanne Forrester in the Senate, and Mayor Gatsis, Frank Edelblatt in the legislature, seeing how the cards fall as their colleagues start to endorse others. We also have Frank Edelblatt, who is going to file today. He's a state representative from Wilton. He's a businessman. It's actually his first term in the legislature. He's been working on a gubernatorial run for some time. He made a name for himself this year when he sort of spearheaded an effort to extend a solar incentive called net metering. He was behind that effort quite a bit. So he'll be filing today, and we'll hopefully get a better sense of his campaign then.
And Dean Spiliotis, I wonder, you know, Jeanne Forrester, Senate Finance Chair, an important position, three terms in the state Senate, calling herself an outsider. Is she trying to, you know, grab onto some of that outsider magic that Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders had here in New Hampshire?
Well, I mean, there's a time-honored tradition in politics of declaring you're an outsider, even if you're an insider, and it's really up for voters to decide whether or not her experience in the state legislature really qualifies her as an insider or an outsider. You know, it's the Republican side. You got four candidates. That's a pretty big field. She's up against, you know, two other candidates, Chris Sununu and Ted Gatsis, who have pretty high name recognition. I mean, literally, if you look at the governor's race, the only two individuals who have really any significant name recognition across both parties are Gatsis and Sununu. So, you know, she's looking for sort of a little bit of a different take on the race. That's sort of a logical way to go about it. You know, Frank Edelblatt, who's I think he's been in state house maybe one term, also obviously going to use a sort of outsider mantle. They both, you know, maybe a little bit of a little libertarian or Tea Party leaning. So sure, why not? I mean, there have been other people who have claimed to be outsiders who have been around politics even longer.
Well, and so Dean and Ali wrapped up the Republicans who have filed or who are about to file today. How about the Democrats, Casey? Just remind us, please.
Yep. So we have three kind of major candidates on the Democratic side. There is Mark Connelly, who filed yesterday. He's a former securities regulator. He's well known for resigning in protest of the state's handling of the FRM Ponzi scheme. There's Steve Marchand, a former mayor of Portsmouth, who's also worked in political and business consulting, and then Colin Van Ostern, who was expected to file today, who is currently an executive counselor. And I think that, you know, while all of them have held public posts before, it is interesting to note my colleague Jason Mood did a story earlier this week on kind of the state of the Democratic race. And in there, he noted that a recent UNH poll found that roughly 80% of people don't know enough about any of them to
really
have an opinion about them. And so I think that's interesting and kind of illustrates the challenge that exists for the gubernatorial candidates this year across the board, particularly in light of kind of these high profile top ticket races with the presidency and the Senate race. Their real challenge right now is just getting out there and making sure that people beyond their kind of standard circles know who they are.
Sure. Wow. 80%. Mm-hmm. I'm struck by that,
yep.
Given that some of these people have held office
yeah.
before. Well, I did want to ask you all about one more political story, and that's Donald Trump returning to New Hampshire to hold a fundraiser with Bill Binney. Now, just remind us, Dean, who Bill Binney is.
Bill Binney is a successful New Hampshire, lives in New Hampshire, businessman. People may remember he ran for the U.S. Senate in the Republican primary in 2010, lost, has now kind of expanded Binney Media. Those of you who live in Concord know the former Walker School, which is now Binney Media right on North State Street, North Main Street area. So he's going to be holding a fundraiser for Trump on Monday, sort of, I think, in between the St. Anselm speech and the later speech on the seacoast.
And we've got a Facebook comment from Patricia who says, I remember when some journalists got into trouble for donating to Democrats, and here's the owner of a station hosting a fundraiser for a Republican candidate for president. She says, so obviously no hope of getting unbiased news from NH1 during the election. Might as well watch Fox. Thank you, Patricia, for the Facebook comment. What do you guys, what else have you heard about this, Casey, that the owner of a TV station is hosting Donald Trump?
Well, I will say that the Boston Globe did reach out to NH1 News in a story that they have, I believe, today. And the news director over there issued a statement saying that Binney's fundraiser activities are personal in nature and do not carry the endorsement of NH1 News. So that's someone in the news division saying, you know, we're going to do what we do our owner has this separate sphere. So that's kind of where the news division over there is standing on that.
Well, and Dean, how typical is it for news media folk to get involved in politics in this way? I mean, there is, you know, news folk often say, okay, we've got our business side and we've got our editorial side, right. and they're different.
Right. That's usually the argument that you hear. You know, it varies. I think in part it depends on how removed the individual is from, you know, the day-to-day operations of the business. You know, obviously NH1 News, but then they also have a number of radio stations that operate out of the same building as well. You know, so it really varies. You know, it does happen sometimes. But you know, my guess is, but I don't know personally sort of how involved Bill Binney is in kind of setting the day to day editorial and news policy of the station. That would sort of be an interesting thing to know. But yeah, it happens sometimes, sure.
And we learned this morning that Trump has two more events on his schedule, one at St. Anselm College. So three events all together in a tiny state like New Hampshire, Dean. What's the strategy there?
Well, this is going to be interesting because this speech on Monday is going to be is being billed as sort of a reply to Hillary Clinton. Had that speech last week that was supposed to be a foreign policy speech, but it was mainly an indictment of Trump's leadership credentials. And so he got criticized for not really responding in force to the speech, other than the usual sort of lying Hillary kind of stuff. So he has said he sort of foreshadowed this the other day, saying that the speech would kind of lay out the case against Hillary Clinton. So it's going to be a very, even though, you know, he's coming back up to New Hampshire, it's going to be a very closely watched speech. And he may even have a press conference. And if he does that, you know, anything's possible, as we know.
Well, I want to let everybody know that next week I will not be sitting in this chair. I'll be on vacation for almost 2 weeks, so I won't be here for the roundup next week. But I always like to end the program by asking all of you what you're going to be covering next week. So Casey McDermott, go first, please.
So I'm interested in kind of what happens now with Bernie Sanders' support in New Hampshire. So I've started trying to reach out to some people both at the kind of official level and grassroots level, just to kind of check in with Sanders supporters and see, are you looking to switch over to Clinton? Are you going to still be kind of Bernie or bust right now? So that's what I'll be working on for the next few days.
That's really interesting. And just remind us real quick, Casey, it was a big margin.
It was pretty wide. I don't remember the exact, but he won pretty handily here.
How about you, Allie? What are you going to be working on next week?
Yeah, well, next week the legislature is coming back. It's the session that never ends. They are going to try to pass a drug enforcement bill to give more money to law enforcement to try to crack down on drug dealers. It failed in the House by one vote, and so they're going to try to suspend their rules and push it through, and there's already some opposition brewing, so it may be a long Thursday.
That's right. We talked about that last week, them coming back, and that is unusual. Go ahead, Dean.
On Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, I will be sitting in your chair, and on Tuesday, we're going to, as part of an NPR series on civic engagement, we're going to be talking about voting and whether or not your vote matters. Wednesday, I'm going to interview a group of retiring state senators. And on Thursday, we're going to look at a new biography of Teddy Roosevelt.
That's right. That's going to be interesting. We're going to talk to some of those state senators who are leaving. Okay. Thank you very much, all of you, for being here. Let's check in now with our June Fund Drive.